What a contrast in those texts from Luke and Psalm. When I heard again this familiar gospel text read, it almost took my breath away with the kind of demands that I feel coming from our Lord. At this part of his life and journey, Jesus asks his disciples both then and now to face into their fear with courage and to follow. Actually, he doesn't ask, he demands. And he expects courage if we want to be his followers. Because that way of Christ is costly. It demands commitment, courage, hope, faith, lots of vulnerability, lots of stumbling and falling and rising again. And where do we find the courage to face into our fears? Perhaps Jesus in our text raised the anxiety of his disciples rather than decreased it. How in the world could they follow these demands? Were they really expected to hate their families? To sell everything? I don't know. But I'm pretty sure he wanted his disciples and his followers and those that were following from a distance, indeed even the crowds, to understand that this way of love was not an easy one. It takes courage to love enemies. It takes courage to love those that feel so unlovable, even when they're our own family members, and sometimes maybe especially when they're our family members. It takes courage to sometimes feel at odds with those who hold different views on faith and life. It takes courage to speak out against racism or demeaning comments or actions toward those who may be undocumented. Maybe that's why those pairings of the gospel with the psalm were intentional by those who put the lectionary readings together for this Sunday. We know Psalm 139 has this strong message of God's constant presence. And I appreciate that translation you used, Pat. The presence of God with us wherever we are and with whatever challenges we might be facing. More about that in a moment. This summer, I checked a book out of our library from our local library on Kindle and read most of it before the 3 weeks expired. And then I couldn't get it again because someone else wanted it. A book by social scientist Brené Brown. Many of you have read her work or listened to her podcast or her TED Talks. Famous for her writings and speaking on vulnerability and shame and worthiness and courage. In this book called Rising Strong, she talks about the need in our lives for vulnerability, the willingness to show up with no guarantees of outcome as a path toward greater love, joy, belonging, creativity. But living life in this way is not easy, she says. Inevitably, we fall, we fail. And that's where the title of her book comes in, Rising Strong. As a researcher, she interviewed hundreds of people from all walks of life, those who were leaders in Fortune 500 companies, those who were artists, those who were couples who had been in a relationship for many years, teachers, parents, who shared their stories, about success and failure in life. Falling, getting back up again. And the commonality of these people, she found out in her research and sitting with the research and wrestling with it some more, the commonality is that these folks were all willing to face into their fear. They were willing to examine it, how they had gotten it both right and wrong, the pain of failure, learn from it, and grew from it. And she says, living that life is where courage is formed, it's where our values are deepened, and it's the path to joy and to living fully. And in her book, she shares a quote from President Theodore Roosevelt, who gave a speech in 1910 called Citizenship in a Republic. And he declares, and I'm going to read it verbatim, and apologies for his sexist language. You can do the translation, I'm sure. Here's the quote. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, nor where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions? Who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly. Roosevelt's words for me embody the journey of faith, the adventure, the joy of demanding and challenging faith. They capture the essence, I think, of what Jesus said to the crowds on the road to Jerusalem that caused him to have many admirers walk away at that point, but also some to deepen their resolve to follow with him, even sometimes at a distance, and even when they didn't understand where he was going and why he was going there. Jesus, to use the words of Roosevelt, invites us into the arena to dare greatly. Now, I don't see myself particularly as a courageous person. A neighbor a couple months ago, or maybe a month ago, was out checking on his cats late at night, and I saw a shadow go in front of our bedroom window, and I admit fear. I wanted to hide under the bed and not go confront this shadow. On the average day, I'm not usually praying for courage or thinking about being courageous. My head knows that God is the ultimate reality and that God is with me, but I can just as easily slip into moments of panic. I wonder if this sermon will connect with you or whether I took a wrong path and should have really started over with it on Saturday. We often feel more lonely and nervous than we do courageous. And I know many of you are courageous people that also struggle. You may be in a job that may feel like it's a rat on a treadmill. You may face the challenges of a failing body and wonder how you can live with the pain. You know, it's easy, I think, to have courage when everything's going well, and courage seems like a luxury that when you're just trying to survive. And then I think we all have the experience of turning on the news, probably our first mistake, and feel the fear rise in our throats. Are we past the point of no return on this journey of climate change? Are we headed toward more war? Will we succumb to building the walls of fear and hate, both literally and figuratively? Well, at its heart, I think this Psalm 139, and flipping between these two texts, can offer us hope and courage when feeling fearful. And maybe it's something we need to commit to memory or print out and look and print it on our fridge or something, to constantly remind us to dare greatly, to let God love us and strive to love God in return, to step into the arena of faith and to wear the dust and the sweat and the blood that makes for faithful modeling of Jesus. And the psalmist declares it boldly, "O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path, my lying down, are acquainted with all my ways. For you form me in my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." And I wonder if the psalmist penned this perhaps in a moment of even doubt and fear, when he felt like he needed courage, and he's perhaps even unsure. Perhaps taking a moment to stop, to remember who the psalmist was, who God is. God, you created me, you gave me gifts. God, I am yours. I am sacred. I am enough, just as I am, with my fear, my lack of courage. The foundation of all courage is God's unconditional love. You could think that courage might be something that we muster up, that we do, that we find, but its source is in the ultimate reality that we call God. True courage begins when we realize that we can believe in ourselves because God believes in us. We can believe in our community of faith because God trusts this community of faith to be God's people in this place. True courage is a strength to declare God is God and I am not. As Saint Irenaeus reminds us, it is not thou that shapest God, it is God that shapest thee. God is with me and I am never alone. We are never alone, but I am not God. I am not the center of the universe. And true courage begins when we realize that we can believe in ourselves because God believes in us. First, God created us, God created you, God knows your story. But if you grew up with the image of God that I grew up with, I remember reading this psalm as a child. And I remember going to my father and saying to Dad, Is it true, Dad, that there is nowhere I can go where God doesn't see me?" And he said, that's right, Wayne, nowhere. Not even behind the couch. I mean, it was my secret place. I thought no one could see me behind the couch. No, God sees you behind the couch too. And what bad news that was to me as a child. There were things I didn't want God to see. You know what I mean? I had to finally come to know God as one who is not out to get me or to judge me for my lack and for my deeds, but one who is loving, who is vulnerable, who suffers with humanity, who knows our fear because God has faced that fearful journey to Jerusalem and the cross. And when I finally got to know God in this way, it invited me toward a little bit greater vulnerability and courage. And likely when these disciples heard Jesus speak these words as they did, it, I think, deepened their resolve to follow, even with their fears. By this time, they had been with Jesus in all kinds of situations, and they had witnessed his clashes with the religious and civil authorities. And they were smart enough to know where this was headed, not in a good direction for their liking. But the good news here is that Jesus didn't ask of them anything that he was not himself willing to do or to anywhere he wasn't willing to go. He was vulnerable himself and taught his disciples to be vulnerable, to realize that there's power in weakness. He told them over and over again, the meek shall inherit the earth. God is most present in suffering. We are extravagantly loved in our brokenness, weakness, when we're afraid. Do not be afraid. Jesus overturns the prevailing notions about power and security by inviting the disciples to imagine the abundant life that comes not through gathering power, but through displaying vulnerability, through service to others, through giving ourselves, by welcoming the stranger and the children. Jesus says the keys to the kingdom of God, the way we can model Jesus in this world, is to be courageous enough to, as Saint Irenaeus invites us, to be soft, to let our clay be moist, to be open, to be trusting, to be like a child. The last shall be first. It's a part of what Brown picks up in her book when she talks about vulnerability and confronts the argument, well, to be vulnerable is to be weak. So she asked people to finish this sentence stem, vulnerability is, and here are some of the ways that people finished it. Vulnerability is sharing an unpopular opinion, standing up for myself, asking for help, saying no, starting my own business, calling a friend whose child just died, saying I love you first, waiting for a biopsy to come back, admitting I'm afraid, asking for forgiveness, having faith, and the list went on and on. Does that sound like weakness to you? Brown says, and I quote, vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weakness. But it is taking off the mask we wear and owning up to the people that sometimes hide behind those masks, warts and all. Facing into the fear with courage and bravery. A practice not for the weak, but the strong, those whose clay is moist. Their job is to risk vulnerability, which is the ultimate strength. It's daring greatly in community with others who also dare greatly. Today we acknowledge leadership among us, those who have given themselves, those who in even small ways, and it is often about small, faithful ways, showing up, making a phone call, asking again, taking minutes in a meeting, planning an action, dealing with the issues that face us as a community of faith. And when we make those small gestures, it deepens our resolve. It's a way of continuing to face into the world in which we live with courage and hope and strength and vulnerability. Even as we recognize some of those leaders, we're very grateful for others among us who also serve behind the scenes, who give so much and sacrifice greatly, doing things and being involved in vital ways, even though they often aren't recognized. Things like running the sound system, or keeping books, or cleaning up after us, keeping this place looking so attractive, making banners, updating bulletin boards, printing the bulletin, and so much more. I want to invite those now who have served on our teams to come forward, whether you've served most recently and are transitioning off of a team, or are new to a team, or continuing on a team. I invite those who are to bring your